back to W.F. Albright.
Who else?
And it's quite interesting to study his viewpoint on this matter throughout his career. He began in his early years by believing in a late date for an exodus and a conquest. But at least he did believe that there was an exodus and there was a conquest. And the way he came up with this viewpoint was, first of all, Exodus 1:11, which we've talked about, mentions Pete Bowman Ramses, and Ramses was named after Ramses II. He ruled in the 13th century. The Exodus must have occurred under Ramses II in about 1270 or so, and the conquest must have been around 1230 or so. So that was the first piece of evidence. And then how do you deal with 1 Kings 6:1? Well, that's not really a problem. Where we have the 480 years from the time of the beginning of the building of the temple back to the Exodus. That's not really 480 years. That is really 12 generations times the ideal number for a generation of 40 years. That's where the 480 comes from. It's a schematic number based on 12 generations of 40 years. But we all know that a generation is really not 40 years, but a generation is more like 25 years. And so that number should really be 300. And so when you add 970, the time, roughly the time of the building of Solomon's temple, when you add that to 300, well, lo and behold, you come up with 1270, the real date for the Exodus. Never mind 480. That's fine, but it ignores these other scriptures we've talked about. It ignores, you know, all the chronological data in the book of Judges and the other references that we've pointed out. So you'd have to really change all those other biblical texts as well as 1 Kings 6:1. This is not an isolated case here of one text giving us the date. We have other scriptures that all point us back to 15th century for the time of the Exodus and conquest. At any rate, using this logic, Albright favored the later dating of the Exodus and conquest. However, he changed at one point in his career and went back to the earlier date for the Exodus and conquest because he believed with archaeological excavation in Palestine, now this is way back in the 20s, that the evidence was favoring the early date for a conquest of Canaan. But then in the 1930s, when he began his own excavations, then he came back to this late date based on his work at Tel Beit Mersim and based on excavations at other sites. So he flip-flopped a little bit, but when he finally came down on the later date in the 1930s, he held that position until his death. All right, so there's three major sites that led Albright to formulate his conquest theory. First, Tel Beit Mersim. And Albright excavated there. We've talked about this in 1926, 28, 30, and 32. He thought it was biblical Debir, but now most scholars believe that Debir is at another site named Kerbet Reboud, which is nearby, and we really don't know the ancient name of Tel Beit Mersim. Of course, Debir figures in the conquest narrative, and so Albright felt with his identification and the fact that it's mentioned in the biblical narrative sort of tied it all together. But now the identification has been thrown out, and we don't have that connection really between Tel Beit Mersim and the conquest narrative any longer. because we don't know what its ancient name was. Here he found a destruction toward the end of the 13th century BC, a very massive destruction. Before that, in the late Bronze Age, there was an urban center there, quite a large urban city. After this destruction, this massive destruction, that was followed by a very poor culture in the Iron Age I period. Albright based that destruction, he dated it to 1230 BC, but he got the date not from Talbot Mearson, but he got the date from Lachish. He knew his destruction was sometime around the end of the 13th century BC, but he couldn't put a precise date on it, but he got that date from Lachish. Well, I think he really got the date from this line of reasoning up here, because, of course, 1270 Exodus, and you take away the 40 years, gives you a 1230 conquest date. But he had the destruction, and then he had this very poor culture in the Iron I period. So his idea was that this was caused by the Israelites, and then the evidence for the settlement of the Israelites was this very poor culture following the destruction. Of course, the Israelites had come out of the desert, and they would have a very poor culture. All right, also during the 30s, the excavations at Lachish were going on. Between 1932 and 1938, under the direction of James Starkey. Starkey was tragically murdered in 1938 on his way into Jerusalem for the opening of the Rockefeller Museum, called the Palestine Museum. He was stopped and murdered, robbed, murdered. So that put an end to the excavation. But there had been 6 years of work there. And they also found a very severe destruction sometime toward the end of the 13th century B.C. They were able to put a fairly accurate date on that destruction from what we call the year for Astrakhan. And what this was, or is a tax receipt written in Egyptian hieratic. And it has the regnal year 4 written on it. That's the date. There's a date on this sherd with this receipt for taxes. And it's year 4. Now, the problem is we don't know whose year 4 that is. Now, obviously, this is an Egyptian document. And so it refers to some Egyptian king. Well, the people at Lachish and Albright, I guess, Albright was probably the one who really was most influential in this, but they said this was the year for Merneptah, which, with the chronology they were using then, gives you a year of 1230 B.C. They were using the high chronology, and see if we have that here. What do they have for Merneptah? 1236 to 1223. That's what's printed in the Cambridge Ancient History. So, yeah, sometime right around 1230 would be Merneptah's fourth year. So this, well, let me back up and make one other point. The Astrakhan was not actually found in the destruction debris. It was found in some later fill. But they linked it with the destruction and said, well, this must have been written just about the time the city was destroyed. After this destruction, there is no evidence of any further Egyptian influence there. In fact, the city was deserted for quite some time before it was reoccupied in the later Iron Age. So it was so badly destroyed that it was deserted. So the Astrakhan then was linked with that destruction. It gave Albright a precise date, for the event, and he applied the same date to the destruction at Tel Beit Mirsa. He said the pottery is about the same, they were destroyed at about the same time, and so 1230 became the magic number. Also at this time, there were excavations going on at Beitin. That's the Arabic name for the site, and you won't see that in the literature. What you'll see is Bethel, because Albright identified the Arabic village of Beitin as biblical Bethel. Not Albright, but actually Robinson before him, but Albright agreed with it and promoted that identification, and it was so set and so certain that nobody even talks about Beitin, they always talk about Bethel. But there's very good reason to doubt that identification, and in fact, I think it's incorrect, so I talk about Beitin, but in the literature, it's Bethel, always Bethel, Bethel, Bethel. So be aware of that. This site was dug in 1934 by Albright and James Kelso from the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, back then called Pittsburgh Xenia, I think. And in fact, if you have a chance to go to the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, they have a nice little museum there called the Bible Lands Museum with the material mainly from the excavation here at Beitin. It's stuff that Kelso has collected, and it's quite a nice little museum. So they dug there in 34, and then Kelso came back in 54, 57, and 60, and put in three more seasons. But the work in 1934 fitted in with Albright's conquest theory, because in 34 they found, again, a very serious destruction at the end of the 13th century, and there was a very fine late Bronze city there, very advanced urban culture, destroyed, and then again followed by a very poor culture. So, again, this was dated to 1230 and related to the other sites. And Albright said, here we have, then, the evidence for the Israelite conquest of Canaan. Now, there was another dig going on at that same time, and that was Jericho. It was being excavated by John Garstang. John Garstang found a great destruction level at Jericho, and he dated his destruction to 1400 B.C., and he said this was caused by the Israelites, and here's the evidence for the biblical conquest. Well, because of Albright's influence, nobody paid any attention to Garstang. He was ignored, and everybody followed Albright's theory. Now, there's a lot of problems with Albright's theory. Even when it seemed that we had these destructions dating to 1230. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell us that Lachish was destroyed. It tells us that the army of Lachish was defeated. Nowhere does it tell us that Bethel was destroyed. It does tell us that Jericho was destroyed. And at Jericho, there was no occupation at the end of the 13th century. It was abandoned at the end of the 13th century. That never seemed to faze Albright. He never even talked about it. He just sort of ignored that fact and swept it under the rug and went about his business of promoting his late 13th century conquest theory. When we get to the 1950s, that Albright's theory was the predominant theory, as I say, over the years. And when we get into the 1950s, there was a couple of excavations, important excavations, that related to this whole question. First of all, the excavation at Hatzor by Yigal Yadin. Yigal Yadin worked there between 1955 and 1958, and again found this exact same pattern, a great urban center of the late Bronze Age, seriously destroyed, and in fact, the destruction was so severe that the site was abandoned after that for several centuries. And this destruction took place at the end of the 13th century, in fact, right around 1230 B.C. Well, we know Hazor was destroyed by the Israelites. It's stated specifically in the Bible. The Israelites went up to the north and they defeated Hazor, head of all those kingdoms, and they set fire to the city. Well, here we have it then. More evidence to back up the conquest idea. Also, Jericho was re-excavated by Kathleen Kenyon. And she found evidence, at least she claimed she found evidence, that the city was not destroyed in 1400, as Garstang claimed, but rather the city was destroyed in 1550 B.C. by the Egyptians. So there might have been a few fundamentalists or conservatives or evangelicals that followed Garstang and said, well, never mind what Albright says, here we have good evidence at Jericho for a 1400 destruction that agrees with the Bible, this is what I'm going to believe. That got wiped out by Kathleen Kenyon. 1400 is wrong. The city was destroyed in 1550, and she said it lay abandoned after that, and there was no city there to be destroyed by the Israelites in 1400. Well, this was the clincher. This work in the 1950s, that just really sewed up the 13th century conquest theory. And as I say, most people followed that, and from what I can tell, evangelicals pretty much went along with this idea because it seemed that, you know, it sort of went along with the Bible, that there was a conquest. Now, there were a lot of other excavations going on in the 50s and 60s, and many of these sites exhibited the same pattern of destruction toward the end of the 13th century B.C., followed by either abandonment or a very poor culture in the Iron One period. However, when you look at the sites and you compare them with the biblical account of things, you see there's some very serious problems. Already I pointed out Jericho, the problem there, because it was abandoned in 1230. It certainly was not destroyed in 1230. It's a problem, and that's, of course, the centerpiece, the one city that, you know, we have the most detailed information about. And to say that that never happened, well, that's stretching it a bit, but nevertheless, that's what the critics said. This was all an etiological tale or something. But for those who take the Bible seriously, it's a real problem. Hazor presents a problem as well, because if the 1230 destruction is the conquest destruction, what about Judges chapter 4 and 5, when Deborah and Barak fought against the army of Jabin, king of Hazor, defeated the army, and in fact undoubtedly destroyed the city, we would be led to believe from the account there. Jabin was destroyed, we're told. So if the 1230 B.C. goes with the conquest, there's no Hazor for Deborah and Barak to conquer, because it lay abandoned for several centuries after this 1230 event. So that's a problem. And in fact, if you go through the archaeological evidence and compare it with the biblical description, you'll find that the cities that were destroyed from the archaeological evidence are cities that the Israelites could not capture. And you'll find that the cities the Israelites destroyed are cities that were not destroyed according to archaeological evidence. It just does not match up. It doesn't fit. So the theory never was very good, I don't think, if you take the biblical record seriously. But in the 1980s, the whole thing fell apart. First of all, Talbot Mearsom, with its 1230 destruction. The subject of my doctoral dissertation was the very end of the Late Bronze Age and the beginning of the Iron Age. So I re-examined all these sites in my thesis, and I found that in many cases the dating was incorrect. And in fact, this 1230 date is much too high, and it was destroyed somewhere around 1175 BC. Not the end of the 13th century, but early in the 12th century. And probably the agent of that destruction was the Philistines, because we have some other destructions right about that same time. And from the pattern, it appears that it was the work of the Philistines. At Lachish, it was re-excavated by David Yashishkin. Beginning in the 1970s and, in fact, continuing yet today. Here he found a cartouche or a plaque. It's really a plaque with a cartouche on it. Of Thutmose III. A cartouche is a an oval like insignia with the name of the king written in it. Each Egyptian king had his own particular name and titles and so on, and developed this cartouche or insignia. And so here at Lachish, underneath the Israelite Iron Age gate, in the destruction debris from that, it's Stratum 6, that 1230, supposedly 1230 destruction, they found this plaque with the cartouche of Thutmose III, which evidently was part of the gate from Stratum 6. Well, Ramses III, of course, reigned in the 12th century, not in the 13th century. And so based on that plaque, now, the date of the destruction there is given as 1150 B.C., not 1230, 1150. Thutmose III, yeah. He ruled in the 20th dynasty between 1184 and 1153, according... Ramses, excuse me, yes. I'm back at the Exodus still. and so that destruction has been redated now. In addition, they have found another one of these tax receipts, and this is year 10 plus. It's broken. We don't know how much more than 10, but it's a number greater than 10. It's a number between 10 and 15. 10 and 19, I'm sorry. It's not larger than 19. So this now rules out the possibility that this earlier receipt could have been from Merneptah, the year 4 receipt. It's written in the same style and without question is from the same reign of the pharaoh, whoever it was. But it can't be Merneptah. He only ruled for 10 years. It has to be a pharaoh who ruled longer than 10 years. And based on comparing the style of the writing, the hieratic writing, with other documents, this has now been attributed to the reign of Ramses III, along with the year 4 Astrakhan. So now Lachish was not destroyed in 1230, but in fact was destroyed in 1115. If we look at the Beitin, it's the same situation. It was not destroyed in 1230, but more like 1175 And this is Wood's thesis. Another very important part of this whole reconstruction was the fact that in Transjordan there was no evidence for any occupation during the earlier time period, during the 15th century B.C. And so the argument was that there were peoples living there during the time of the Exodus and conquest, because of course there's reference to the Moabites and the Edomites and the Ammonites and the difficulty the Israelites had coming through their territory. So there were peoples living there, but archaeologically speaking, based on the surveys of Nelson Glick back in the 30s and 40s, he had no evidence for sedentary occupation back in the 15th century B.C. And he didn't have any evidence from Middle Bronze until he got down into the Iron Age. In fact, the Late Bronze period was a blank, a gap. And he came out with this idea that there was nobody living there at the time, and so therefore the Israelites could not have come through there in the Late Bronze period because no one was there, or at least they would not encounter anyone. And so the conquest must have taken place in the 13th century, at the end of the 13th century, because then you begin to get evidence for some occupation in Transjordan. Well, that idea is fast going by the boards based on work in Transjordan. Survey work in recent years is bringing forth quite a bit of evidence for Late Bronze Age occupation in Transjordan. Now, when we speak about archaeological evidence, what we're talking about is towns and cities. I mean, that's really the only thing you can see archaeologically. But these Moabites and Ammonites and Edomites do not necessarily have to be people who built cities. They could have lived in tents and still been a formidable force and somebody the Israelites would have to reckon with. In fact, the few references we do have to these people in Egyptian records say just that. They were people who lived in tents. So I don't necessarily think we have to find this archaeological evidence for urban centers at the time the Israelites came through there. But most people seem to think they need that, and in fact we are getting it. Now at Hazor, Hazor is still the same. That 1230 date is a good date. I agree with Yadin's dating. But I believe that this 1230 date should be ascribed to Deborah and Barak. And there's an earlier destruction at the end of LB1 around 1400, which I believe is the conquest destruction. By moving the conquest of 1400 and ascribing the destruction level of that time to the conquest, then that leaves you a city to be destroyed by Deborah and Barak, and it very nicely solves that problem. It's interesting to look at the literature on this whole matter of Hazor, because they come up with all kinds of ways to explain away the Deborah and Barak story. They say, well, it's really the same story as the conquest because the name of the king is the same, Jabin. Or it's really a story about Bethel and not of Hazor. Of these revisions now to the dating, it's very clear that these destructions could not be a result of the Israelites. Maybe the 1230 at Hazor, if you want to hold on to that, but the others clearly are much too late. 1175, 1150 is too late to be conquest destructions, because we know from the Merneptah Stele that Israel was in the land at the beginning of the reign of Pharaoh Merneptah around 1210 BC. They were already there. Merneptah boasts about having defeated the Israelites in his campaign in his first or second or maybe third year around 1210 BC. So anything after that has nothing to do with the conquest. But as I say, if you want to hold on to Hazor, you got the problem of Deborah and Barak. So the evidence is pretty well dissipated in the 1980s for the late date. And all archaeologists have abandoned that theory today, except maybe somebody who's not familiar with the evidence maybe would still be holding on to that. But that idea of a 13th century conquest has now been rejected in favor of this emergence theory. Everybody's gone over to that, as far as I can tell. Question?
Is it possible to find critical conquest movies that you are given for TBM?
No, we can pretty well explain what's going on here. The 1175 is the Philistines. 1150 is associated with the Egyptians leaving Palestine. That's the end of their control, their authority in the region. They were driven out, or they just left on their own. We don't know quite what happened. But we can explain those destructions quite readily. They have nothing to do with the conquest. The 1230 here at Hatzor, I believe, is Deborah Barak. And that fits very nicely.
In the long period of time, did you say that the book of Joshua lasted 6-7 years?
Yes.
How much time did Joshua live on the land before he died? Because from 1400 to 1280, so
well, we've got the period of the judges, and we'll talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. Now, this emergence theory is based on archaeological evidence. And that evidence is that after the collapse of the late Bronze Age city-states, beginning with Hatzor around 1230 and continuing all the way to about 1150 with the demise of Lachish, and cities are going under during this time. After the collapse of that late Bronze Age city-state system, then we find a very poor culture in the Iron One period. In that period, we have small agricultural villages appearing all over the landscape. And these are very poor, and they are just, as I said, agricultural villages, and there's a lot of them. In the previous Late Bronze period, the population was concentrated around large urban centers. We had the city-state system. That whole thing collapsed. The population then dispersed over the landscape, and we have many of these Iron Age villages cropping up all over the place in the Central Hill Country, in the Negev, in marginal regions, in Transjordan, in Galilee. Many of these villages became Israelite cities in the Iron Age. And so I think we can be quite certain that they were, in fact, inhabited by Israelites in the 12th century B.C. Scholars point to this evidence of these Iron Age villages, and they say, here is the first material evidence we have for the appearance of the Israelites, which is a true statement. And so they say they must have just come into being in the 12th century, because here is the evidence for Israelite occupation of the land of Canaan. When we look at that material evidence of these small Iron One villages, we see a very strong connection with the previous Late Bronze Age Canaanite culture in the pottery, the building methods, metallurgy. So it's quite clear that these people that settled these Iron Age villages had a very close connection with the previous culture in the Late Bronze period. Therefore, archaeologists conclude, most of them, that these people who settled the Iron One villages were Canaanites. There is another possibility, however, and that is that they could have been settled by people who had a close contact with the Canaanites, but weren't actually Canaanites. One blind spot that scholars have in this whole thing is that they don't recognize or take seriously the biblical record of the period of the judges. In the time of the judges, we are told the Israelites were there in the land hundreds of years, and they lived in tents. Now, when the Israelites came into the land, according to the Bible, they had wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. They had lived in the desert. And in fact, those who came into the land of Canaan were born in the desert. So these Israelites had no material culture tradition of their own. Those who knew something about building or maybe making pottery or arts and crafts from Egypt, they died in the wilderness. And the nation of Israel were just nomads living in tents, and so they had no material culture, and they came into the land, and that's reflected in the biblical account. They lived in tents. And so we should not expect to find archaeological evidence for Israelite occupation, at least direct evidence. Now, certainly the Israelites would have used pottery, but where would they have gotten that pottery? They would have purchased that pottery in the markets from the Canaanite potters. They knew nothing about making their own pottery. And so I'm sure there's evidence that has been found that is from Israelite occupation in the late Bronze Age, but there's no way to distinguish Israelite from Canaanite. We have a lot of burials, a lot of tombs that seem to be from a non-urbanite component of the population, but there's no way to tell if it's Israelite or some other nomadic group. So archaeologically speaking, the Israelites are invisible in the late Bronze period or the period of the Judges. And I agree that the first material evidence we have is here in the 12th century, but that neglects the period of the Judges when they were in the land as simply pastoral nomads. And so I think, you know, if you take the Bible seriously, you have to have that period accounted for. And so you have to put their initial entry well before the 12th century. And the book of Judges would indicate that the Israelites lived in contact with the Canaanites, and they could have been learning something about their, you know, their culture and their pottery making and all of that. Now, in the 12th century, we find the pottery is very poorly made, and of course, this is identified by many scholars as Israelite pottery, and they say, you know, it's an indication of their initial appearance, emergence, and they are making very poor pottery and so on. So that's kind of the concept that most scholars have today, that these 12th century villages are the evidence for the appearance of Israel. There never was a conquest. There never was an exodus. And all of that earlier material is simply legendary material that was put together to explain Israel's origin. Question? You've got some references to Bimson's recent articles. Yeah, there's Bimson has written a couple articles critiquing this whole thing, but as far as if you want it from the source of the people who are generating theories, there's a bunch of books. I mean, whole books written about this by various authors, and they're all referenced in Bimson's articles. There's one in the JSOT when last fall, and Thamelios maybe a year ago, and I think in those articles Bimson references, you know, the various scholars who've put together this reconstruction. Bill Deaver is one, and he's written quite a bit about it. And there's a whole bunch of people. Now, what are we going to do about it? Well, we'll talk about that next week when we look at Jericho. Because I think there's a solution. I think we have the evidence for the biblical conquest. Yeah.
Is it possible for someone to use your thesis and argue that the conquest that happened 1175 or 1150?
No, because of the Merneptah Stela, you see. That says Israel was in the land in 1210 B.C. They were already there. So anything after that is immaterial. And in fact, I'll talk more about the Merneptah Stela. Based on the Merneptah Stela, we have to put Israel, the emergence or the entry of Israel, even way before 1210. So we'll get into some more of these issues next time. Yeah.
But your explanation of the material makes so much sense. What I don't understand is why. What problem do these critical scholars have? I mean, it makes so much sense. Is it that they don't want to go against the academic regimen, or what is it?
The basic problem is spiritual. That's the bottom line. They do not want to accept the literal interpretation of the Bible. Now, one difficulty is the predominance of this late 13th century conquest idea. That has gotten so fixed in the literature that people think in terms of a late entry of the Israelites. So when the evidence disappeared for a military conquest, then they just switched over to this emergence idea at the same time. Nobody's even thinking about earlier. We have Bimson's book, you know, but that hasn't been accepted. That's been flushed down the toilet. You know, he's a fundamentalist and so on and so forth. So nobody takes seriously the idea of a conquest in 1400. It's an uphill battle, and it'll take decades to turn around the present situation and the present thinking. Yeah, it's a pretty sad situation. But, you know, the evidence is there. There's no question about it. We've got the evidence. It's just got to be put out, published, and dealt with. And, you know, we just have to keep hammering away at it. Okay, well, let's call it a day, and we'll carry on next time. We'll talk about Jericho.